Hi, my name is Stuart Weems and welcome to the Investopoly podcast. My goal is to share easy to understand, evidence-based, holistic insights to help you master the game of building wealth. And over the next two episodes, I'm going to address the question, should I sell an underperforming apartment? And I'm sorry to have to spread it over two episodes. It was just too long to do into one episode and it split nicely across two. Now, apartments have underperformed houses for the past 13 to 14 years in Melbourne and Brisbane and the past 6 years in Sydney. So really, I'm thinking about Melbourne specifically, Brisbane also. But if you have invested in an apartment and you thought that apartment was investment grade in that you made a really good decision, it ticks all the boxes, it's fundamentally sound, but 10 years later, you haven't really experienced much in the way of capital growth, you are naturally going to be thinking, should I continue to hold this property? It doesn't mean that apartments no longer work as investments and houses are the only things to invest in. And that's what I want to take you through in these next couple of episodes to help you really work out what to do in that circumstance. So Melbourne's been the weakest apartment market easily. You know, over the last 13 years, really since 2011, the median apartment price in Melbourne has only increased by 2.6%. Coincidentally, and maybe even interestingly, this matches the inflation rate. The inflation rate since 2011 has also been 2.6%. So in real terms, apartments haven't actually changed in value, which is a terrible outcome for investors. And so this is what I'm talking about. If you've had no real growth, particularly for Melbourne, but really the approach that I'm going to talk about applies to all markets, what should you do as an investor? So I guess the first thing you need to do when looking at any underperforming investment is that you need to decide what has driven the underperformance. So is it an asset-specific issue or is it a market-wide issue? Because if it's a market-wide issue, it's really then typically a case of just riding it out and wait for the market to recover. You know, long-term investing really just requires a hell of a lot of patience. And so that's the thing with apartments is typically, the first thing to think about is, well, this is most likely to be a market-wide issue. It's not something necessarily that's specific with your asset. Now, that's not to say that you shouldn't critically assess your asset in terms of quality, and we'll get to that particularly in part two next week. So you should do that. But we also have to acknowledge that we are beholden to the market. You know, you can't control investment returns. You can't control what markets will do. You can only control in the type of property you invest in, where that property has fundamentals. Once you've done that, you then got to let the market do its thing and have the patience to sort of wait it out. What I have done is updated a chart that I've shared before in this podcast, and it looks at the median apartment growth rates since 1980, and it sort of charts it to demonstrate that property markets and the apartment market is no different, moves in two distinct cycles. There's a flat cycle, followed by a growth cycle, followed by a flat cycle, followed by a growth cycle. And so I've charted Melbourne, Brisbane, and Sydney. Otherwise, the charts get too busy. If I charted all the other capital cities, I'm absolutely positive we'd see the same. And I've done that for property markets, in fact, across all the capital cities, and the same remains true. So when investing, you know that you're going to experience a flat cycle. Those flat cycles tend to last between 7 to 10 years. Obviously, this flat cycle in apartments, particularly in Melbourne, has lasted longer than that today. It's now into its 13th or 14th year, but there will be some mean reversion. There will be a growth cycle eventually. It certainly has been the case over the last four decades. So I think it's really important to think about, you know, what has contributed to this really long flat cycle. And then that helps us work out, you know, when could that cycle change? How close are we to entering into a new growth cycle? And I prepared a very detailed report and updated that report in November 21. So it's almost a couple of years old now. And I've got a link on the blog on the website, of course, if you want to look at that report. But since then, obviously, some more events have occurred. And really, I think that there's three things. And if we really focus particularly on Melbourne, but I think this analysis applies across all capital city markets, there's really three main things that have contributed to this really flat cycle. The first one is that apartments were relatively expensive in 2011 when this flat cycle began compared to houses, you know, relative over three or four decades. So the median apartment price in Melbourne between 1980 and 2010, so that 30-year period, grew at an average rate of 9.1%. That's a substantial growth rate in apartments, notwithstanding then you get the rental yield on top of that. So investment returns for that three-decade period were above average. And so therefore, apartments in terms of value relative to houses, apartments were quite expensive in 2010. And this is a really important point to note, because if you invest in a market after a growth cycle, and that growth cycle has been substantial, then you should know that your medium-term returns are going to be probably poor, as in flat, and you're going to have to hold that asset for a lot longer in order to achieve average returns. So it doesn't mean that your investment is broken or will never work. It just means that you need to hold it for a much longer time to let those cycles average out. Because if you begin with a 13-year flat cycle, then the only way you're going to achieve a good average return is if you experience a 10-year growth cycle, for example. So therefore, you've got to hold the property for maybe 25 years to enjoy returns. However, if you're lucky enough just to buy just before a growth cycle, well, you might be able to hold a property for 8 years to get some fantastic returns, right? So it doesn't ruin the investment, just means you've got to hold it for longer, which is really an important point that we're going to come back to in part two next week. Okay, so 13 years ago, apartments were too expensive, or really expensive relative to houses. The other thing that happened 13 years ago was the supply side. There was a huge influx of new apartments in all capital cities and in all markets, and particularly in Melbourne. The volume of new apartments post 2010 tripled. And what was happening at that time is that you would have developers building, you know, high-rise buildings full of apartments, and even sort of lower-rise apartments in outside of the CBD, and selling them to non-resident Chinese buyers, you know, just as investments or whatever. They were selling them off the plan. They would send sales agents off to China, you know, and run seminars and sell these properties. And those buyers now are nowhere to be seen, because Australia tightened foreign ownership laws, restricted the amount of apartments that could be sold to overseas buyers. And that level of demand has now evaporated. And consequently, we had this really huge influx of apartment stock that were constructed quite cheaply, you know, that they weren't really of a great grade, which means that it really pulled down prices of existing stock as well. Because, you know, why would you pay $350,000 for an old apartment when you can get a brand spanking new one for the same amount? And again, we're going to come back to, you know, the cost to build in a second. I'm going to talk about that, because that certainly obviously changed over the last couple of years, but we had a massive supply. And now over the last five-ish years, that supply has really come back. But of course, it takes markets time for the normal underlying demand to sort of satisfy that level of supply. And the third and final major impact on the apartment market was the banking regulator clamping down on borrowing rules. And that began in 2014, so about 10 years ago. And the most substantial change was that banks stopped using a benchmark for borrowers' living expenses. They used to use something called the Henderson Poverty Index, pretty terrible name really. And, you know, they would assume, for example, a family of four, you know, would spend $40,000 a year on living expenses, which is obviously pretty crazy. The reality is it's probably doubled that amount, and was double that amount back then as well. And so the regulator asked the banks, no longer do that, get the borrowers to declare what they're spending, and then verify that information by having a look at bank statements. And so now, if you've applied for a loan in the last number of years, you know that you've got to declare what you spend across maybe 10 or so different categories. And the bank's then going to have a look at your bank statements to make sure that's broadly correct. Obviously, for apartment buyers tend to be financially weaker than house buyers. You know, most people, given the choice, would buy a house as opposed to an apartment, except for affordability. And because they've got lower affordability, tends to be a little bit weaker. So they're very sensitive to the changes in living expenses really dramatically reduces one's borrowing capacity, particularly first home buyers, for instance. And we know it's a really strong correlation between money supply and property growth. So if credit is very loose and there's a lot of money flowing into the property market, of course, that increases demand by buyers and that pushes prices higher. But the reverse is true. These three things happening all at once have given rise to elongated flat cycle. Okay, so I want to finish today's episode then by thinking about, well, that is the past. And we know that's resulted in a flat cycle. What does the future hold? How are those things going to play out over the next decade? And what else do we need to consider? So let's start with apartment supply. So new dwelling starts in the September 23 quarter, which is the last quarter published by the ABS, were the lowest they've been for more than a decade. So we know that there's a huge reduction in new stock being built. And that with a backdrop of massive increase in immigration and therefore rising population, you know, that's going to create a big problem. Like there's going to be a huge shortfall in housing and particularly around apartments because developers really just aren't building them anymore. Now, there's other few sort of construction issues as well. I mean, firstly, how many construction companies are going bust? Both, you know, just residential house builders, but also, you know, larger high-rise construction companies. You know, they really struggled. We're dealing with massive businesses going into administration and really struggling from a financial standpoint. So when we think about supply, we realize that there's going to be fewer construction companies actually able and willing to build these things. Overlay on top of that, the rise in construction costs. And whilst the inflation around construction costs has normalized, it doesn't mean prices have reduced to pre-COVID levels. In fact, they're stuck at that level. It costs 30% or more more to build a dwelling today, including a high-rise tower. So that's going to flow on to new apartment prices as well. We're not going to be able to sell something or they're going to be able to sell a one-bedder for $500,000, for instance. You know, the prices for one-bedders are probably close to 700,000 now. And so therefore that new stock will start to look quite expensive compared to, you know, older style apartments. And then finally, which is going to add further to the price of new build apartments, is that there's obviously been a lot of well-documented issues around cracking. If you think Mascot Towers in Sydney, cladding problems, those sorts of things. Plus also, now developers have to sell to domestic buyers. They can no longer really sell off the plan to non-resident Chinese buyers or wherever from Hong Kong, wherever they might be, right? So the standard is going that people are going to demand will be much, much higher. And people will be attuned to, you know, the quality of the build. They don't want to have to deal with the issues that poor people in Sydney with Mascot Towers have had to deal with and cladding and so forth, which I've mentioned. So you put that all together, fewer builders, you know, the cost to even construct something that's similar to what we constructed 10 years ago is now 30% or more, probably closer to 40%, more expensive. And then we've got to increase the quality. And so what that means is that all those things just make older style apartments look even more attractive. And I've got two more points to leave you with today. Second last one is that apartments are now relatively cheap compared to houses. In fact, I'll put it this way, apartments are the cheapest they've been compared to houses in the last four decades. So it's kind of the reverse of the position that apartments were in Melbourne in 2010 when this flat cycle began. So in Sydney, the median house price is double that of apartments. The long-term average, houses should be 1.4 times more expensive than houses, not 2 times more expensive. In Melbourne and Brisbane, houses are 1.5 times more expensive than apartments. The long-term average is really between 1.2 and 1.3 times. So as a sector, apartments look really attractive relative to houses from a pricing perspective. My final comment is about rising rents. And it's been well documented. Rents rose last year, last calendar year, by double-digit numbers. They're probably going to do the same this year. Maybe not. Maybe it could be high single digits, but it's going to be a significant increase in rental income. When you look at rents over the last 13 or so years, the growth has actually been below average. So whilst the media really focus on what's happened over last year, you know, when you look at longer term, rents haven't really increased that much. So they're just sort of catching up, if you like. Notwithstanding that, most apartments will yield around 4% gross in terms of gross rental yield. Owner-occupier interest rates sort of circa 6.5%. So you've got a 2.5% gap there, which is pretty modest compared to history in terms of holding a particular asset or for people to think, well, should I rent or should I buy? Now, if interest rates start to come down a little bit, and maybe in the second half of this year and maybe a little bit over next year as well, and if rents continue to rise, that 2.5% gap will close. And at some point, more and more people will think, well, hang on, why am I renting? I should just go and buy this property because it's almost going to cost me just as much and I'll get the capital growth and the security around renting. And you might argue, well, hang on, Stuart, maybe they're not in a financial position to buy, which is true. That's true. So there's a huge cohort that won't be. But there's also a lot of people that, for example, get some help from parents. You know, they might be going to uni and parents might subsidize some of their rent. The parents might sit there and think, well, hang on, why is my child paying 4.5% rental yield to live in this property? We may as well just buy the property. It'd be a good investment for us. And our child can still pay us some rent, but at least we're not giving the rent away. It's, you know, rent money, dead money kind of principle. And as it becomes cheap or more attractive to own than rent, you know, that will actually stimulate demand for that market. Okay, so that might sound like I'm really positive on the apartment market. And I do. I think I am relatively positive. I think it will perform well, but that's not to say every single investor should continue to hold an underperforming apartment. And so next week in part two of this topic, I'm going to talk about, you know, when I think prices might start to rise and some of the factors that you really need to consider when deciding whether to hold or to divest of your apartment, as well as taking you through a four-question decision-making framework. So I'm going to ask you four different questions to work your way through, and working your way through those questions will tell you yes or no, should I hold on to that particular apartment? So I look forward to sharing that with you, and until next week, bye for now.